Hey everybody, it's Mike McCabe with Our Wisconsin Revolution. To me, the way for our society to truly celebrate Black History Month is to actually teach Black history. I was never taught in school about sundown towns, where Black people were forbidden to live and could not even visit after nightfall, even though I went to high school in a community that evidently used to be one. I never learned about Bacon's Rebellion in school. I was in my 50s before I first became aware of this episode in American history that played such a critical role in the invention of white supremacy and the development of white skin privilege laws in this country. In the earliest days of the American colonies in the 1600s, African Americans had a legal status similar to that of European American indentured servants. That changed abruptly and dramatically in the aftermath of an uprising in 1676 by settlers in the coastal tidewater region of Virginia, led by Nathaniel Bacon, challenging the heavy-handed rule of colonial governor Sir William Berkeley. Those voyaging to the New World to escape economic hardship, physical deprivation, and religious persecution in Europe had two choices. If they had the means to secure a place on a transport ship, upon arriving they were given land to farm in a colonial outpost. If they couldn't pay, they entered into indentured servitude, usually for about 7 years, before obtaining land to settle. That unpaid labor was the foundation upon which the plantation system was built. By 1676, laboring class workers, both free and indentured, of both European and African descent, were growing discontented. The land given to those freed from servitude was on the outer reaches of the territory and far from the colonial capital of Jamestown. They felt unjustly taxed and faced restrictions on their right to vote and to have a voice in colonial affairs. Bacon pulled together a collection of still indentured laborers along with frontier settlers who had been recently freed from servitude and granted land to protest their treatment by the Tidewater aristocrats. On July 30th, 1676, Bacon and his army issued a declaration in the name of the people, enumerating their grievances against Berkeley. After months of conflict, Bacon and several hundred of his followers marched to Jamestown on September 19th and burned the colonial capital to the ground. Berkeley fled, even before an English naval fleet could arrive to aid Berkeley and restore his rule. Bacon died of dysentery in late October. John Ingram stepped into the rebellion's leadership vacuum caused by Bacon's death, but many rebels parted company with Ingram, and the insurgency lost steam. Some of Bacon's land-owning followers returned their loyalty to the Berkeley government. Others had their property seized, and 23 men were executed by hanging. While Bacon's rebellion did not overthrow Berkeley's regime, the sight of free and indentured laborers from both Europe and Africa united and fighting side by side did throw a mighty scare into the wealthy landowning aristocracy. Recognizing the threat this posed to their economic system that depended on indentured servitude, alarmed ruling elites saw the need to drive a wedge between the united laborers. They established a new identity for laborers of European descent, both free and indentured, setting them apart from their brethren of African descent and enlisting them as supporters of lifetime hereditary slavery. This identity was white. Soon after Bacon's rebellion, a series of white skin privilege laws were enacted using this new terminology, breeding discord between free whites and African Americans and Native Americans. White supremacy was invented to divide and conquer, to maintain the aristocracy's grip on political and economic power. The result of this maneuver was that the African slave trade started in earnest in the colonies to replace the old system of trans-race indentured servitude. It's anyone's guess what would have happened if European and African laborers had stuck together in the 1600s. Maybe if indentured servants from Europe had not sold out their counterparts from Africa for a slightly elevated social standing and a few economic crumbs, the African slave trade would not have taken root in America. If the aristocrats' divide-and-conquer maneuver had not worked, maybe the coming revolution could have produced a truly democratic republic. Maybe the Three-Fifths Compromise never would have been struck, and maybe the original sin of slavery would not have been embedded in the new nation's constitution and remained there for nearly all of America's first century. But poor and powerless American settlers did turn on each other. Some did sell out others, and rulers kept right on dividing and conquering. Irish immigrants coming to America were not granted legal status as white in their new country until the mid-1800s, and only after they aligned with pro-slavery forces in opposing abolition. Russians, Jews, and Italians were not considered white under the law until well into the 20th century. Think about that. People with my complexion and my ethnic heritage were not white, according to the law, for more than two centuries after the first American settlers arrived in places like the Tidewater coastal region of Virginia and established settlements like Jamestown. For other ethnic groups with my same skin tone, it was more than 300 years after the colonies started springing up before they were granted legal status as white. That is the history that is rarely, if ever, taught in school, the hidden story of how white skin privilege was invented by the wealthy and well-placed out of desperation to keep people under their thumb. I shudder to think what else I was never taught in school and haven't stumbled upon on my own. For our Wisconsin Revolution, I'm Mike McCabe.